This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
Yay, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's D.A. on CBS Sports Radio.
Man, I'm feeling great. Happy Friday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel? That's all that really matters. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7. RocketMortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks for being with us, everybody. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. We have announced and decided on our next two movies for Mothership at the Movies as we break down one sports film every week in a deep sports dive. We've done Blue Chips and He Got Game. This upcoming week, we will watch Rookie of the Year, as baseball season should be here. And then after that, Happy Gilmore for what would have been Masters weekend. So do your homework. Watch Rookie of the Year. That's where Henry Rowan Gardner blows out his arm, gets surgery, and as a 13-year-old dominates the major leagues. Yes. And then Happy Gilmore, an Adam Sandler vehicle, the week after that. It's time for the memories of March and the madness of March as well.
It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win! Gone! Oh! He did it! Bryce Drew did it! Falfo has won the game! A miracle! An absolute miracle! Bryce Drew has done it for Valparaiso!
A quick pass to half court and call a quick timeout so they can get in better shooting range.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
Shot clock turned off. Calgary. Hall. Eight to shoot. Hall. The runner. Loose ball. It's good. With 4.4 to go. Shannon.
Don't want to foul.
Shannon from the corner. And it's over. Gonzaga. The slipper still fits. They win it. 73-72. Holy cow.
Buzzer beaters. Bracket busters, iconic moments, the greatest stories of the NCAA tournament. It's the madness of March.
McNamara.
Off balance.
I guess that wrist is really hurting him. And Miles had good defense on that shot. He was right in his face.
Starts inside, goes outside. Heinrich gets it. Heinrich puts up the shot. It's too long, and Syracuse is your national champion.
Final fours or not.
17 years ago, the Syracuse Orange Men at that time won their only national basketball championship. Jim Boeheim was the head coach, Carmelo Anthony the most outstanding player, and our next guest was a sharpshooter freshman on that team who is now an assistant coach on Boeheim's staff. G-Mac, Jerry McNamara, joining us this morning on the show. Jerry, good morning. How you doing?
DA, good morning, man. How's everything going?
Everything is good here, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us. And crazy to think it's been 17 years. I was a Syracuse grad, 2 years out of school when you guys ended up doing that. And one of the great parts about that run, obviously, was that we had freshmen on that team that just stepped up and led the team. Yourself, Carmelo Anthony, Billy Edelin, three freshmen that played significant minutes. What was the bond like between you guys stepping onto campus into a situation where you were front and center, the core of the team already?
It was a great group. I think the terrifying thing is it's 17 years. I know. That's how quickly that had gone by. Our group was pretty special. It was pretty obvious right away that we thought, because we're naive freshmen, that we were really talented. But the way we kind of clicked as the season progressed, going into, the Christmas break game, we played Georgia Tech. And going into that game, and that Georgia Tech team ended up making the national championship game the following season and lost to Connecticut. And we steamrolled them by like 30. And that was Chris Bosh and Jared Jack. And at that point, I thought, this team's got a chance to be pretty good. Like we're playing pretty well, and we just beat a really good team, a really talented team. So, I think the bond was what you mentioned, and it wasn't just the fact that we had freshmen that were obviously big contributors on that team. We had sophomores as well. We had, I think, the youngest team in the NCAA tournament the year we won it. Craig Forth and Josh Pace and Hakeem Warwick all being sophomores with our freshman group. All three of those guys contributed. Matter of fact, all three of those guys probably won us a game throughout that tournament stretch. So, just a unique group. We actually had some really good news inside the family. Josh Pace just was named a head coach this week.
Nice.
So women's basketball, he's done a great job. Western New Mexico. So we're really excited, and obviously it's been a lifelong bond that we've developed. But that year in particular, the 2002-03 season is it's hard to believe it's 17 years, because at some point throughout a day, anybody that's won a national championship or ended up on a pile at half court, at some point it probably crosses your mind.
Yeah, you guys began 11-1, would finish the season, the regular season, 23-4, heading into the Big East tournament. But Jim Boeheim has kind of historically not been very kind to freshmen. And as you said, it was a really young team. Was he hard on you guys in terms of playing time, shots taken, etc.? Or did he realize, because you guys were such a focal point of the roster, that he had to be a little bit more flexible than he had been with previous freshmen and sophomores?
I think the flexibility came in maybe the minutes. Certainly not in the treatment. the treatment was, we were held accountable for, quite a bit. I remember the Oklahoma State game where we were down 17 in the first half. And, really that other group, the second group coming in that, could have been starters, guys like Josh Pace and Billy Edelin, and I thought, won that group. And some of the shot selection that Carmelo and I had taken in that, I don't think Coach was too happy with. And, he sat us down and talked to us and said, listen, I don't necessarily want that. I don't think he said it to me that politely or to Melo that politely. But, he's a demanding coach. He expects you to play at a high level, and he demands it every night. I think that's why he's probably a Hall of Famer. And, that's the way it went for us. I think it's nice when you go and you have full confidence in your ability from the head coach, but he also holds you accountable when you're not playing to it. So, it was one of those unique situations where I think he probably, Melo, it was a no-doubter. I mean, that's obvious. The fact that his talent was so high, he probably should have been National Player of the Year. He's that good. And then my situation was probably like, all right, I understand what the ability to stretch and shoot does for this of what we have around. So, it was up and down as far as trying to figure out what coach, how he, wants me to play, right from the start. But, it was actually the loss against Memphis in the Garden early in my career, like our first or second game, where I figured, all right, he wants me to play the way I am, who I am, which is aggressive.
Jerry McNamara is our guest here on the show, assistant coach at Syracuse, as we look back at the 2003 National Championship SU team. So at that point in his career, Jim had had a couple of Final Fours, but had lost to the National Championship game, 87-96. Did you guys have a sense going into the NCAA tournament as a three seed, hey, we want to win one for coach, or is that not really part of the equation? You're young, you're just there to compete, and you're just trying to win basketball games.
It's so far from reality until you get to it. I think we actually, the entire year, Quet Delaney was such a great leader on that team. And we, when we would bring it in, you know, people say together, family, we would always say, you know, Final Four. And, you know, you just say it because that's your goal at the end of the year. So when we hit the NCAA tournament, that's where your mindset is, but you can't look past it. I mean, you know, we just talked about the Oklahoma State game where, you know, we don't even make it to Albany if we don't get through Boston and Oklahoma State. And, you know, then the exciting thing for us was that it was going through Albany because we had such a great regular season that we got a chance to go through Albany. It was, you know, all orange up there, and that scene was incredible. And then when you get to New Orleans, I think that's when you start to think, like, whoa, we're here, we're on this stage. It was when we had our open practice at the Final Four was when I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. You're sitting in the Superdome and, you know, there's, you know, we're talking about 30,000 people at the Carry Dome. There's, you know, 30,000 people for like an open practice and you're just sitting there like, this is insane. And,
wow.
Yeah, you know, there's, it's just such an event. It's really like everything that surrounds the Super Bowl. That's how the Final Four is. And it was our first time experiencing that. And that's when I think you start to think about it. It's like, man, look, we have a chance to do something that no one has done. But, you know, I think when it came game time, we were just really, like I said, naive, confident, young group that was playing our best basketball, which was the most important thing. We were playing our best at that time, and we had already been playing well. You just kind of clicked at the right time. Then when we hit the Kansas game, I think that's when you start to think, like, Coach hasn't done this. He hasn't had this yet. He's had chances, but he hasn't had this. And I think that's when, you know, it starts to click in your mind. And then the scary thing is where Kirk Heinrich had that last attempt, the field goal attempt.
Yeah.
You know, you start to think about the Keith Smart. You know, he's curling off, and I'm thinking about Keith Smart and Indiana and, you know, but – you know, thank God we got it done, but it was really, really, it's kind of a, you know, two birds, one stone thing. We get to accomplish everything that we set out to do, and then at the same time, you get to be the first team to do it for a guy that's done it at such a high level, just hasn't been able to get over the hump.
So retracing those steps, you guys enter the NCAA tournament as a three seed. You go to Boston the first two rounds. You beat Manhattan, the 14 seed. You're down big to Oklahoma City, but come back and beat them by 12 to move to the Sweet 16 in Albany, just 2-plus hours away from campus. So it's all orange fans. And at the Pepsi Arena, you guys end up surviving a tight game against Auburn, the 10 seed, 79-78, move on to take on the 1 seed Oklahoma. You beat Oklahoma badly. You have another 1 seed in Texas coming up. You beat them by double digits. You've now beaten two number 1 seeds en route to a national championship game, both from the Big 12. You've also beaten Oklahoma State from the Big 12 as well. What was it like going into those games against OU and Texas where you're the underdogs and against a 1 seed, having Carmelo play the games that he's been playing, you shooting the way that you did, and your team coming together in those two?
Yeah, you know, the Big 12, that's what, you know, everyone, I think we beat five Big 12 teams that season. I think we beat Missouri, who was ranked 11th at the time during the regular season. You know, for whatever reason, we played quite a bit of Big 12 teams, but they had a really good league. And, you know, going in and playing against Oklahoma, Oklahoma had a lot that surrounded them. Like, that was kind of the talk going into the tournament was Oklahoma, that they're the sleeper, it's Oklahoma. And, you know, our zone was just kind of everywhere. You know, it was one of those nights where they didn't have an easy time finding too many opportunities. You know, and when they did, it was probably a little too late because we hit a stretch where we got our run. And, you know, that's the way things go with that defense sometimes. If you're struggling and, you know, an active group kind of smells blood in the water and you know, now it becomes longer and more active, and you know, people are flying around, taking away angles and getting you in trap situations and rotating out of them, I think it gets scary. And it was that way against Oklahoma that night. We were really active. We got a couple, not only steals, but we got a couple shot clock violations. You know, and then you hit Texas and you're playing them. And Carmelo, I thought that was his best game in a Syracuse uniform. He was terrific. You know, the second half of the Texas game and the national semifinal game was I thought Melo's defining moment of, you know, you got, I think TJ Ford was National Player of the Year that year. And Carmelo in the second half, I think he scored our first 12 or the second half, the first eight, whatever it was. But he was, I mean, he was everywhere. He was terrific that game. And, you know, they came out hot early too, and we kind of weathered that storm. And then they made a push in the second half to start the second half. And, you know, it was just kind of history from there. We really closed it out. That team, I think we were down double digits 11 or 12 times or 13 times or something in that season and came back and won. That gives you the kind of idea of how competitive a group we had that season and why we were able to obviously win a national championship, but why? Because we had built into that, because we had the mentality that you can never put us away. And, you know, we're going to keep grinding out, keep clawing. And you know, at the end, it just worked out. You know, it worked out because of that attitude. I felt like we continued to progress and get better.
Jerry McNamara, our guest, looking back at the 2003 national championship for Syracuse. You guys beat Texas, move on to the championship game, as you mentioned. You take on Kansas. You are red hot in the first half. You can't miss. None of you guys can miss. It's a 50-point first half for you guys. How did you feel as a freshman, national championship game in a football stadium, and everything you're taking is going down?
It's a good feeling. There's no doubt about it. It's a good feeling. Just one of those halves where you find a little bit of room. You know, there's probably two. I made six. There was probably two of them that weren't high-quality shots. You know, but because of the rhythm of the game and because you hit a few, you take one because, you know, if you get a look, it's going in, it's going in. I feel great. But that was the mentality. You know, the great thing for me all these years back is looking at pictures of my family in New Orleans. It really is. I mean, of all the things that happened, you know, looking at pictures, you know, I got my family when they're doing, instead of the horns up, they're doing the horns down after we beat Texas. And, you know, the reason I love looking at the pictures is because I didn't see anybody. Our focus was so intent on being there for the reason to win it that I literally didn't spend time with my family. It was go to practice or go to shoot around, go to the game, and then after you would do any of that, I'd be right back to my room or team meal, and that was it. So, you know, to get to experience the Final Four through their eyes of what happened to them and their experience, to me, it was the great part because it was makes it worth it how you can seclude yourself and isolate yourself to, you know, accomplish the thing that you're there to accomplish. And, you know, so you've put your, you know, all your focus into that one moment and to capitalize on it because of that isolation and, you know, blinders on, you know, I felt like that group was able to, you know, and me individually, I was able to capitalize on my moment because I had been preparing for it. That's what I was there to do. That's what I was focused on. And, you know, just the opportunity of a lifetime to try to go out there and make something happen on a big stage. And I was fortunate to do that. But I felt like I had prepared both physically and mentally to be there.
You survive the Kansas Jayhawks, Akeem Warwick's block at the end of Michael Lee, 81-78, confetti comes down, you guys are national champions, and 17 years later, you're on the staff with Jim Boeheim. Boeheim comes off as a curmudgeon, he could be salty, he could be sharp-tongued, but it is very obvious his love of your team, of you guys, of the team that won that national championship, and a lot of his former players, but is there a different bond with him that you and Carmelo and those guys have because of the fact that you delivered the national championship?
I think so. I think there's got to be a certain degree of appreciation for both sides. You know, for coach, like I said, because he had an opportunity to do it, when you have that group that does it, you know, I think that's got to mean a great deal to him. You know, but for me, all these years later, getting a chance for the last 10 years to be on staff with him, you know, one is, you know, a little over a year and a half as a graduate assistant, and, you know, now as an assistant. It's just been such a rewarding experience for me, both as former player and now current assistant coach. So he's completely opposite of what you see on television or what he is portrayed to be. Very thoughtful, very intelligent. I don't know. Yeah, you probably know this, how much he reads. He reads. I'll tell you a great story. We're playing Virginia Tech at Virginia Tech, and I'm sitting in the locker room before the game with Coach, and he's sitting there and he's reading. And Coach Buzz Williams comes in and he's knocks on the door and he's like, you know, I was like, hey, Coach, you know, he's in here, and he came in. So after the game, we're walking through. We had just played, and we're walking through, and Buzz stops me and he says, does he always do that? I said, what? And he said, does he always read before the game? And I looked at him. I was like, always. Like, he is on the bus. You know, it's just, I think it's that same thing, the ability to separate and be calm and take your mind off the pressure of what you know you're about to do, which is go in and compete as hard as anybody in the country. And he's just, you know, his mind – for basketball, his mind for politics, his mind for, you know, Hop, who's out at Washington, who obviously was an assistant coach here, who, you know, is doing great things as a head coach. He always said, Coach Behan can take the most complicated thing and simplify it. And it's true. You know, a lot of people won't take the most simple thing and complicate it, but Coach is just, he's always had the mind of, you know, just being able to take something that you think is like a Rubik's Cube and he just can, you know, manipulate it and put it right in place. And, you know, I've been very fortunate to have that relationship. He's been a big, big impact on my life and certainly a lot of former players' lives. He's done a great deal, not only for us, but for this community. This guy is a lot different than he's portrayed. So, you know, I like that he's portrayed that way because at least we get the attention of the Cuse. That's our boy.
Well said. Jerry McNamara, one of the heroes of the 2003 National Championship Syracuse squad, celebrating 17 years since the confetti came down to the Louisiana Superdome, now an assistant coach under Boeheim at Syracuse's basketball program. Jerry, really cool to catch up, man. I appreciate the time very much. Thanks for being so generous with it and telling the stories. I really, really enjoyed that today. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Jerry McNamara, G-Mac, joining us here on the show. When we come back, a little baseball, Billy Ball, as in Billy Martin, one of the great characters in baseball history. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
Everybody was in an uproar. Maybe this guy's thinking, hey, I'm 25 years old. Sorry.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Our Ask the Pros question of the day brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. John in Utica, New York says, DA, great to hear G-Mac, Jerry McNamara here on the show. What's your favorite memory of the 03 National Championship game being a Syracuse alum? Well, there were two things. Number one, I felt really good for Jim Boeheim because Boeheim had so many close calls and finally got that national championship after so many decades of the helm. But also, I felt good for the student radio team. That sounds kind of dorky and nerdy, but I was those guys just 2 years earlier. And when you finally get to be a senior, you get to take over the student radio station broadcasts. And I was on those courts and in those arenas calling games. And for generations, Syracuse broadcasters had never called a national championship game. And here were guys that I went to school with, young men that were on my staff when I was a senior and they were sophomores, getting to call a national championship at a Final Four. I just thought that was the coolest thing. And also, that was a momentous day. That day in early April 2003 was the first day of my show full time. I couldn't get to New Orleans because that was the first day they gave me my own show, my first job in Fort Myers, Florida. So that was the first ever DA show that was strictly the DA show. That wasn't me filling in for another show, another host, a weekly show. That was my first daily show, happened that Monday, that afternoon, and then that night, Syracuse was national champions. I'm glad we bumped back with some funky music here, because let's go back to the 1980 baseball season. At that time, the Oakland A's were an absolute disaster. In 1979, the A's, coming off great years of the 70s, three consecutive World Series championships, a dynasty in the early 70s, fell on hard times, 108 losses. Billy Martin, one of the great characters ever, was the manager. He was hired by Charlie Finley to be the manager of the 1980 Oakland A's. And in one fell swoop, improve them into a winning ball club. One of the craziest turnarounds in baseball history. The A's went from 108 losses to 83 wins in second place in the AL West, behind only the powerful Royals of the time. Dale Tafoya has authored a new book called Billy Ball, Billy Martin, the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. Dale joins us here on the show. Dale, good morning.
Good morning, Damon. Pleasure to be on your show.
My pleasure to have you here on the show. And it's one of the great stories and turnarounds for one season in baseball history. But the true charm of it is that Billy Martin is one of the greatest characters, craziest characters in baseball history. What inspired you to want to follow him and his trail, considering how many incredible stories there are about him?
Absolutely, Damon. Great question. And I studied it. I found this story. I live in the Bay Area, and the Oakland A's are nearby. They've been here since 1968, and I was doing some research in their history. So I didn't set out to write this book about Billy Martin. I mean, Billy Martin will always be connected to the working class in New York, and he has a cult following in New York, and he connected with working class fans everywhere he managed. But this was a story where I dug into the bowels of Oakland A's history and baseball history, and saw where the Oakland A's were in 1979. They drew 307,000 fans. On April 17th, 1979, Damon, the A's drew 653 fans one night.
Oh, my gosh.
653 fans. So this is a story where Billy was born here in the Bay Area. I know he'll always be remembered as a Yankee, but he was born here in nearby Berkeley. And he always, even when he was with the Yankees and he was later coaching for the Twins, he knew Charlie Finley. When the A's were in Kansas City, the Kansas City A's, he knew Charlie Finley was going to move the A's to Oakland. And Billy always was eyeing that Oakland A's managerial job since they came to Oakland. And, of course, the A's drew 307,000 in 1979. Charlie Finley was running the club on a shoestring in Oakland. And Billy Martin, first year in Oakland, triples attendance. By 1982, Billy's final season, the A's were Baseball America's Organization of the Year.
Amazing turnaround. Yeah. And Billy Martin's road through baseball to that point in time was very rocky. Obviously, he had his playing career, but as a manager, he was a hothead. He could turn guys around, but he could also lose them as well emotionally. He gets brought into the Yankees. George Steinbrenner hires him. He wins the World Series in 77, but is fired in 78. That's the Bronx Zoo years. He's brought back in 79, and that begins the long, kind of somewhat sad saga between him and Steinbrenner, back and forth. He's fired this day. He's hired the next day, but he had been fired by the Yankees. That was his dream job. He was forlorn. He was a broken man, and then he comes onto the A's job, as you said, in 1980. What type of redemption and drive and fire did Billy Martin have going into that season?
Oh, he had a lot of fire, and it wasn't – Billy knew when he came to Oakland, the A's were in limbo. Charlie Finley was trying to sell the A's to Marvin Davis, an oil tycoon in Denver. And there was so much uncertainty about the Oakland A's that the American League president, Lee McPhail, even delayed printing the 1980 schedule. Billy knew what was at stake in Oakland. He knew the A's were possibly going to leave Oakland. He knew the A's were a crisis and were the worst of baseball. So not only did he want to improve the A's standing and take them back to the World Series, he wanted to save that franchise in Oakland. Because he grew up only 10 miles from the Oakland Coliseum where the A's played. So he not only wanted to prove himself that he was a good manager, because if you remember, Damon, he was fired before being hired by the A's, before Finley hired him. He was fired the October before in a fight with a marshmallow salesman in Minnesota.
And outrageous.
Steinbrenner fired him, and then Charlie Finley got him out of the unemployed line in February of 1980, and he turned that club around.
Outrageous. Dale Tafoya joins us. He's the author of a new book called Billy Ball, looking at Billy Martin of the 1980 Oakland A's. Billy was a fiery guy. Billy had dealt with alcoholism. Billy had a rough childhood, so he could be very hot, very cold. How did the players that were on the 1980 team, including Ricky Henderson, a Hall of Famer just at the start of his career, how did they take to Billy? Did they like him? Did they find him to be a little bit too over-aggressive? How was their relationship?
Yeah, great question, Damon. You know, like any club Billy managed, Billy had his cronies, players that were loyal to him, and also he had players that didn't like him. Billy, he wanted to be the star of the show, and other players that maybe were narcissistic, if they wanted to be the face of the franchise, they wanted all the attention, they tended to clash with Billy. But these Oakland, and this is what makes the story so great, is when Billy came to manage the Oakland A's in 1980, these young players, the Ricky Hendersons, Damon, Steve McCaddies, Rick Langford, Dwayne Murphys, these young players were used to playing at the Oakland Coliseum in front of 300 to 1,000 fans a game. So they see what Billy Martin did and how he brought so much Oak baseball fever to the Oakland area. And all the players, the A's players that I talked to about Billy, they simply say this. Billy came in and made a bunch of young kids believe they could win. And that's what he did with that Oakland franchise. Billy has the ability, Damon, to hypnotize players, brainwashing, manipulate them to believe they could win. And he did that everywhere he went. When he first managed the Twins, he turned them around. Then he went over to manage the Tigers. He resurrected them. He totally resurrected Texas Rangers based on 1974. And his success never lasted long. He had a long shelf life in the city, but he had a knack for just turning bad things around. It's incredible, and it's all documented in the book there.
The book is coming out. The book is available, Amazon.com. It's called Billy Ball, The Resurrection of the Oakland A's, Billy Martin, and how he authored that. He's Dale Tafoya, the author of this. You can follow him on Twitter for the latest on the book, at Dale Tafoya. And again, as we mentioned, Amazon and other places, the book Billy Ball is available. Great stuff this morning, man. Thanks so much, Dale. Good luck with the book.
Great. Thanks for being on the show, Damon. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Andrew Bogish is standing by with your headlines. Good morning, Bogues.
DA, good morning. One last time this week, and let me pull up my script so I can read you those headlines. The NFL is working under the assumption that they can start their season on time in September. Chief Medical Officer Alan Sills does admit to NFL.com they know that could change at any moment. For it to become reality, a lot has to happen in the next 5 months, in particular, the widespread availability of coronavirus testing. And then there's the draft, the league informing teams that two options are under consideration, allowing those teams to make their picks from their facility or a nearby location, assuming neither would violate any local guidelines, or personnel working from their homes. If the league chooses number two, it applies to every team, even if their area allows them to be somewhere else. All of this on the heels of the Saints saying they would do their draft from a local brewery. We've already discussed Bills GM Brandon Bean laying it on thick and showing love and respect to Tom Brady and the Patriots. Now here's Bean on one of the first major moves of this offseason when he sent number 22 and three other draft picks to the Vikings for Stephon Diggs.
The way I'm viewing it with the draft capital that we moved to acquire him is that we moved up, let's just say, four spots. And we traded up there and we got him and we know the player. You know, it's just a more proven thing right now.
Bean went on to explain the uncertain offseason led him to believe that a veteran wideout would be a better addition than any kids he could draft in the back of round one later this month. For some reason, the Raiders are no longer signing veteran corner Eli Apple. Former Packers safety Demarius Randall now has a deal in Vegas instead. Titans running back Derrick Henry signs his $10.2 million franchise tag tender. The Bucs are keeping Blaine Gabbert to back up Tom Brady. And Chiefs wideout Sammy Watkins agrees to a restructured deal for 2020. He'll now make $9 million base salary, another $7 million available through incentives. This creates $5 million in much-needed cap space. The results were, quote, overwhelmingly positive. Those the words from Tua Tagovailoa's camp after Tua saw a doctor picked by team physicians yesterday. Those doctors and trainers can request certain tests be done to prospects. This is the new normal since players can't visit team facilities. European soccer leagues now hoping to finish their current seasons in July and August. A memo from multiple governing bodies to their teams said not playing at all is the very last resort. Three-time FCS All-America linebacker Jabril Cox is transferring from North Dakota State to LSU. That's Fargo to Baton Rouge. Cox had 92 tackles, 5.5 sacks for the Bison last season. I didn't get a chance to mention this yesterday, but longtime radio voice of the White Sox, Ed Farmer, has passed away at 70. Farmer grew up a White Sox fan, pitched three seasons for them, making the 1980 All-Star team, and then spent 30 years in the broadcast booth. We had some fun with him because he's one of those guys that almost gets angry when the other team does well. He goes from really excited White Sox calls to, it's high, it's far, it's a Griffey home run. But he's done a great job for three decades, and White Sox fans are going to miss him a lot.
Appreciate the headlines, Andrew. Baton Rouge to Fargo sounds like how I might open up the show on Monday morning. When we come back here on the DA Show, Target Demo Friday, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's a black hole block party. Here's what our listeners are doing as they connect to the mothership.
Well, Friday, everybody. Here's from Joe on Facebook, listening on WXNT 1430 in Indianapolis. Here is Kevin on radio, on the radio.com app in Bourbon Country, just north of Lexington, repairing heavy equipment outside, loving the spring weather. War the Bourbon Bell being the coolest nickname in radio history. Love the show, guys. Thanks for my daily escape. The Bourbon Bell got her nickname because she is a Kentucky grad. Jeff on Facebook, listening at home in Buffalo on radio.com. Love the new bits with stunned to a news in this date in mothership history. Keep up the great work. Hashtag, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Justin on Facebook, good morning, DA. And the family listening in Savannah, Georgia on the CBS Sports app. I'm changing oil on the cars and picking up the garage. Thank you all for making these times go by easier. Pete the Body, thanks for the second PGP. It was a fun listen. Doug on Facebook, beam me up, DA. Looking forward to another weekend of games and TV with the wife. No need to leave for anything. I don't even have a job, Damien.
I don't even have a job, Damien.
Doug in Woodhaven, Michigan, listening on SiriusXM Radio. Hashtag, I need more Jody Mack. Hank writes on Facebook, I'm on 93.1 The Ticket in Boise on my way to work. No sports plus all work equals no fun. Hashtag beam me up. Juan, DA, please, working from home and listening on SiriusXM 206 from the outskirts of Milwaukee. Stay healthy, guys. Hashtag it's about the money. Beam me up. Danny on Facebook is listening in Huntsville, Alabama, protecting a building from looters and writing a new batch of Mraz jokes. Michael is on the CBS Sports app of the great state of Michigan while delivering medical gases. Hashtag, I'm out, bye. Hashtag, hold snapper and third string quarterback.
Hold snapper and third string quarterback.
Josh on Facebook is making power for the people on 640 AM in Bristol, Virginia. Hashtag, little wet, little drippy.
I'm a little wet, a little drippy.
Michael's in Myrtle Beach. Jonathan's in Kingman, Arizona. Michael is on Facebook on the radio.com app in Elmira, Ontario, getting ready to homeschool the kiddos, beam us all up, and get us the hell out of here. Denisio, good morning, Captain of the Mothership, listening on radio.com. Target Demo Friday on my birthday. Whoop, whoop. Not working at all today. Just want to say peace to you and the Mothership family. Peace of the world. Better days ahead. Daniel's also in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. 100.3. Hashtag, I don't even have a job, Damien.
I don't even have a job, Damien.
On Twitter, Moose is in Northeast Wisco. Catching the show and full on podcast later on. Doing the same thing I've been doing. Sticking close to home. Watching reruns of shows I've seen 100 times. And eating junk food out of boredom. Maybe I'll switch it up and move to the other end of the couch today. Jonathan is on The Fan in Florence, South Carolina, putting out these Doritos while coronavirus runs around like a chicken with its head cut off. Hashtag beam me out of here.
French onion dip with bacon.
Uncle Paulie tweets, 1270 in Buffalo, done painting, about to take my wife and then my two daughters, creating a new breed of Spartans. Anybody who says they don't have time to work out is full of it. No excuses. Thanks to the COVID-19, get moving, be less fat. Aaron tweets, I'm listening in Southern Illinois on the radio.com app. Going to practice some social distancing on the lake today. At least I can still fish during this time. Boomer tweets, DA, how in the hell did Mraz get a college degree? Anomaly? Nathan tweets, down here in Southern Illinois, getting ready to hand out meals to kids in our area. First time in 30 years, not watching a Final Four this week. Looking forward to hearing you guys on Sunday to help me get through. Hashtag bring back sports. We will be on the air Sunday, 1 until 4 Eastern time, right here on CBS Sports Radio. So catch us then. The 6th edition of the DA Show every week now. Kevin's in Myrtle Beach, 100.3. Job site still open, so we're still working. Getting ready to listen to DA trash my Patriots yet again. Happy Friday, fellas. Isn't that nice? Angie Corrado, grinding in the home office with my 6th grader. Thankful for the ability to do so. Looking forward to some virtual happy hours. How about a mothership virtual happy hour? Hashtag we shall overcome. Hashtag good vibes today.
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Kevin's in Delray Beach on radio.com. He's jogging 5 miles. As long as there's a donut tied to it, that's the only way he believes that Mraz is a big boy can do that. And Opie tweets in, he's listening on the radio.com app. I drive a truck to make deliveries on the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia, and your show passes the time during the drive. Hashtag keep it up. We shall, Opie, we shall. 5 days every week, Monday through Friday, then the 6th show on Sundays. We're here for you for a little slice of normalcy, so come and hang out with us on a daily basis. To try to be normal in the Mraz household, he's nicknaming rooms in his house. It's the epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
I do have some sandwich regrets, so I think I went a little overboard. I had bought 2 pounds of cold cuts and 1 pound of cheese a week ago today, and I am completely out. And I think I have been, because I don't know about you guys, but I have nicknamed parts of my house certain names as if I'm leaving. So Sean's Deli is upstairs. That's my kitchen. And
welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order?
Sean's Deli likes to, look, you get a lot of bang for your buck on the sandwiches. There's a lot of extra meat there. That's a place you want to come back to every day. You know for your dollar, you're getting meaty sandwiches.
We have the meat.
The problem is Sean's Deli is a big sign outside the door that says, we are out of meat today. So I probably, the guy running the deli, which also is me, probably should have been going a little lighter on the meat for cost efficiency because I have no cold cuts left to make a sandwich for lunch today.
Just a good burger, please, and I'd like that to go.
What are some other names of places in your house right now?
The A. Mraz Theater. It's downstairs. That's our movie theater. I have my 70-inch TV with my surround sound. That is where we've been watching movies. 365 Hudson, because we're usually 345 Hudson is where we go to work. That's where I'm set up in my air hockey table right now. And the Holiday Inn, it's just that's the name. That is my bedroom right now.
So you know how to take the reservation. You just don't know how to hold the reservation.
These are all things I had. And the patio lounge in the back. I have some outdoor couches. That is a bar when weather permits. I like to sit outside and enjoy some cocktails around a fire.
We're punishing you with boredom. Yo, this place is jam-packed.
So this is what I've done. I'm sure I'm not alone, but I have nicknamed parts of my house just so I don't feel like I'm home. I will tell my wife, I'm going to Sean's Deli. Can I grab you anything? I'm going to the patio lounge if you want to meet me for a drink at 5. And these are things I'm doing.
Oh, my goodness. That is brilliant. That is really brilliant. I absolutely love that.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Great job by everybody here on the show this week. As you might imagine, not normal circumstances, abnormal circumstances, but everybody's doing such a good job. Thanks to Mraz for booking so many awesome guests this week. So many great college basketball guests. It's been a ton of fun to go down memory lane. Bogues and Bilotti and Cap, everybody's working so damn hard. Connor Green and everybody, Hickey and Jock alone. Everybody's just grinding so hard. So hopefully the show sounds like it. Thanks to all these guys for such a wonderful week here aboard the DA show. Onward and upward. We will see you on Sunday and then Monday morning as well. Be good and be good to one another, everybody. The Mothership disconnects.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.